Hello, and thank you very much for listening to this episode of the Billy Newman Photo Podcast.
But today's photograph comes from one of the springtime scenes of light and weather that comes through really more often than other places in the world, but it comes through pretty often through the Willamette Valley. And this is a photograph of a passing rain system, like a big cell of a storm in the Willamette Valley with a lot of light coming through the low level of it. And it's really cool. You get to see the green grass, this kind of desaturated tone in the green grass as it comes up to the rainbow that's there shining down onto the land. And then you see a bit of the rain as it comes up higher and higher into the darker clouds above. So it was a really cool, colorful photo that I liked a lot. And this is what I try and push for a lot with some of my photographs, is to go for more of an ethereal or dreamlike representation of what reality was at that time. Even though this was just a regular summer storm with rain and some sunlight, I think it really comes across as a special moment, this photograph. So it's a really cool thing, and it's something I've been trying to work on more and more in the photographs I've been creating.
You can see more of my work at billynewmanphoto.com. You can check out some of my photo books on Amazon. I think you can look up Billy Newman under the authors section there and see some of the photo books on film, on the desert, on surrealism, on camping. Some cool stuff over there. And I wanted to jump into a couple of the things I've been doing through the month of July and some of the outdoor camping and travel stuff I've been up to. I was going to run down some of that in this podcast today. I wanted to talk about a trip I did out toward eastern Oregon. I think like last, or what, it was a week before last is when I was out in this area. And I was trying to get some good observations in for Comet NEOWISE. I'm not sure if any of you guys got to check that out while it was in its prime viewing section there. I think that was why we had kind of like the new moon before it switched over to being a gibbous moon or a nearly full moon like it's been the last week or so. But I think, what was it, around like the 15th through the 25th or so of July, there were some pretty good observations to be made of Comet NEOWISE. And I guess after kind of reading about it a little bit, it's not considered a great comet like Hale-Bopp was, or I think it was it Hayataki in 1996. We haven't had a great comet in a long time. I remember seeing those when I was a kid, though, and that was pretty cool, watching Hale-Bopp come through for, it seemed like 3 months or something, you know, that you were just kind of looking at that in the low corners of the northwestern and western skies. It was kind of cruising across the skyline there. I remember that still from like third, fourth grade when it was coming through. And I also remember the year before that, when like straight up in the air, straight up in the sky at night for, it was only like a week or so. I was a kid, you know, but I remember for that week, you could see a real bright two-tailed comet that was going through. I can't remember how to pronounce it. I think it's Hayataki, or I think it's some Japanese name, I'm pretty sure. But that was a really cool one. That one I still remember really clearly. And I was only like, I don't know, seven or something when that comet came through. But I really appreciated getting to make some observations of that one when I was a kid. I missed Halley's Comet, though, back in, what, 87, I think was the last one it came through. And I probably will be the few years or that, you know, that decade or two of age range that doesn't get to see Halley's Comet in their lifetime. So I think I was born in 88, of course. So if I make it past 100, then maybe I'll see it. What is it? Maybe like 80-something years. So it's probably not going to come back around until, I think it's like the 2070s or 2080s that I'd have to make it to for to see Halley's Comet again. It'd be fun, but I don't know. Maybe we'll see how the future is at that time. But it was really cool to get to see Comet NEOWISE. It was just a little below what would be the legs and feet of Ursa Major, the Big Dipper. Or like the Big Bear, as it would kind of be observed. But if you kind of look at the Dipper part that we're all mostly familiar with, if you kind of consider Ursa Major, the larger bear constellation that it's structured on, if you kind of look down below the Dipper, is where I was able to make my observations of Comet Neowise. And over here in the elevation area that I'm at in western Oregon, it's about 200 or 300 feet above sea level. And there's kind of a constant problem with haze and with light pollution in this area. And I think it has to do something with of course, you know, the amount of population that's around, but also there's something about the air quality or about how the air kind of flows out around here that just doesn't ever seem to be as crisp or as dark as you can get up in the mountains. And really, it's just like a stunning difference when you're able to get out further and make some more clear observations. It's just, you know, the level of magnitude of stars that you're able to reveal just in a dark night is so much more crisp and clear. It's just like a total difference. So it was cool to, I think I first was able to spot just a little fuzzy bit of a second magnitude version of Comet Neowise while I was here in town. But I tried to make a special trip out toward eastern Oregon, out into the desert, just to do some camping stuff. But what I wanted to do at the same time was make some good observations and also try and get some good photographs of Comet Neowise as it was coming through during its period, where you could make some good sightings of it. But it was cool. So going out to eastern Oregon, as it got dark, a little past 10:30 or so, as you look to the northwest, you could really see the comet and its tail spread for a couple inches in the sky. And I was really surprised to notice how little of it you could really make out or see when you're in an area of almost any light pollution. Once you're back in town or once you're in a lower elevation area with some light pollution and haze around, it was really difficult to make out in the same way that I could out in the desert or out in the mountains. And so I thought that was pretty cool to get to see and get to check out over there. But it was a blast getting to do some stuff out in eastern Oregon. I went over to the John Day River area. And I was checking out that area. There's a lot of public land out in that area, but there's also a lot of private land too. It's just kind of an interesting area how it's sort of broken up. And it was cool to get to go out to, though. I headed out to Madras, and then I took off and headed over east of there until I ran into the John Day River. And then I was able to use this map that I have to go through and find some of the open roads that are, the smaller gravel roads that are set up to kind of traverse the backcountry out there. So I was able to find a few of those that were open and travel around on those for a while. And that was pretty cool. I was able to find some dispersed campsites and set up right along the John Day River, which was really cool. It's a beautiful area out there. It's kind of interesting. The John Day River flows through this sort of, I guess it would be, I don't know, it's kind of like canyon land, and it's also sort of these rolling grass hills that sort of make up the landscape of northern and northeastern Oregon. And I think, as soon as you kind of get a little bit north of Bend is when you get out of the Great Basin area, and you start to get into another kind of landscape that seems to stretch up north of the Columbia River up into Washington. I've heard that some of it's from like really old deposits from the river systems and the waterways that were up there, and how were like there's old deposits and then erosion that's happened from those rivers running through the area for such a long time. But really cool to see kind of the rolling hills and then some of the carved out canyons that go through the John Day River area up there. When I found the campsite I was at, I was pretty far away from everybody, and I was really far away from any substantial town. I think it was near, I don't even know what it is. There wasn't anything there when I drove through. There was a bridge and a couple little ranch houses, real ranches, right? Like just a little house, like a little two bedroom house, and then 100 acres of cattle to deal with. So it seems like another life out there. I wonder how they're dealing with, kind of the way of the world as things are this summer. But it was cool. Yeah, getting out there, kind of set up my campsite and stuff, had my truck going. And that was all pretty easy going. But then I waited till dark after 10:30. Yeah, Comet Neowise was really visible up below the Big Dipper. That was pretty cool to get to see out there in eastern Oregon. Really bright, really clear. You could almost make out the second tail. I had my binoculars with me. And I think there's some 10 by 42s. And those worked really well to view the comet. looked really crisp through the binoculars, and yeah, really easy to spot most of the night. Even just to the naked eye, it was really easy to spot. It was just like, oh yeah, it's right there. There's a comet. It's just a big wisp in the sky. So it was really cool to get to view it. What I did is I set up my tripod and I have my camera with me. And so I set it up with a really wide angle, and then I was trying to get some photographs of it as the comet was sort of coming down to set. On the landscape of the hillside, you know, as the hours went on into the night. So I think I stayed out until maybe 1 or 2 in the morning when the Big Dipper was sort of scooping down a little low onto the horizon. And then at that point, the place where the comet was dipped below the horizon and then was out of view for the rest of the evening. And I think even into the morning, I think by that time when I was photographing it, it wasn't visible any longer. Up in the morning sky. I think they said, you know, at first in early July, you could kind of view it around Capella if you were able to get out early enough, say 3 or 4 in the morning. But as it was moving, it was kind of creeping up pretty quickly, you know, day over day over day. It would kind of move a good chunk through the sky. And in the direction that it was moving to be more visible at the nighttime, which really offered more hours of good observation time, which I thought was pretty cool. To wait until it was really dark enough in the northwest view of the sky, probably about 10:30 onward is when you're finally able to make out those kind of finer points of light in the sky in that region. So it was really cool. Set up the tripod, set up the camera, set up some manual focus to get it kind of set sharp at night. You can't use autofocus when you're trying to make photographs of the night sky and the stars, because it just kind of seeks back and forth. So you have to set it to manual focus and then ring out your focus ring to infinity and then just back a little bit. You'll notice this every time if you do it. It's really frustrating in the dark because you can't really always make it out in an easy way and edit your mistake quickly. But if you go all the way to infinity and then take pictures there of the night sky, you're going to notice that those points of light that are the stars sort of end up a little fuzzy. And it's because all the way to infinity, for whatever reason, just isn't quite in focus at infinity. So you have to go all the way out to infinity and then back it off just a little bit. And that'll nearly ensure that most of that part of the image is in focus the whole way. And it's difficult, even if you do have an f-stop that's a little bit more tightened out, say like an f4 or f6 or something, you're still going to get a lot of that out of focus softness if the focus ring isn't really dialed into the right spot. So I tried to work on that a little bit and dialed in my focus, was able to set it up with a reasonable ISO to get some images of the night sky and pick up some of those finer points of light. And then I was able to take a series of photographs in a few different locations out there in the John Day River Valley, which I thought was really cool. It was pretty to be out there, and it was a nice night, really warm in the River Canyon, and really remote too. Like I was mentioning, I think I was the only person out there for a few miles. I saw another group coming in they had like a little midsize SUV, and they were going fishing out at a bend in the river a couple miles up from where I was. And so I took my truck down a little further and camped out just on the side of the river. It was cool. Nice green river up to the kind of high desert tan rim rock that runs the area around there. So it was a cool evening, cool campsite area. It was a cool spot to check out Comet Neowise too. So I tried to check it out up until, I don't know what, 1:30 in the morning when I couldn't see it anymore. And then spent the night out there, out in the John Day River area. And then the next morning got up and tried to check out some of the different roads and stuff that went around. You can check out more information at billynewmanphoto.com. You can go to billynewmanphoto.com/support if you want to help me out and participate in the value for value model that we're running this podcast with. If you receive some value out of some of the stuff that I was talking about, you're welcome to help me out and send some value my way through the portal at billynewmanphoto.com/support. You can also find more information there about Patreon and the way that I use it if you're interested or feel more comfortable using Patreon. That's patreon.com/billynewmanphoto.
we've made like a big switch over the summer, and like I've been talking about on the podcast, over to like the Sony lineup, which has worked out, I think, pretty well for us. I think it's been cool, like using the Sony camera systems for a couple months now.
Yeah, I've really liked it. It's been cool having a completely different camera setup.
Yeah, see, we were working with Nikon for the longest time. Like, it was probably about 10 years ago also that I bought my first Nikon camera. And that was like a D40. Before that, I had used a couple others. But yeah, that was like the first DSLR system that I got to get into digital photography. And that was about 10 years ago. And so I was with Nikon, kind of building a system in Nikon for a really long time, you know, nearly that whole 10-year period. And it really didn't blossom into a ton of stuff. So I thought, yeah, I'm going to sell all of this. I'm going to try and go with a different system for a little while. And I think the Sony stuff has paid off pretty well. There's definitely some stuff that fits what we do in photography really nicely.
Absolutely. I think that the Sony cameras are really, really good for like outdoor landscape and all that adventure photography that people are so into, we're so into.
Yeah, I love doing the outdoor adventure tourism photography stuff and like the low light stuff.
Yeah, really the low light, all of the nighttime photography options. It's really amazing.
Yeah, there's so many great options or just abilities that you can have with high ISO sensors now. And like on the Sony line, there's just a lot you can do, really cool stuff that you can shoot. There's stuff you can never have done before, like the whole like Chris Picard documentary or film that he put out about photographing like surfers in the auroras at night. Yeah, you just could never have captured that before, but it's really one of the first times, and it's right on the cusp of that point in history where we have sensors that are capable of capturing that kind of low light stuff in real time, like capturing that many frames to get video at night like that, but also capture those real colors. So it's cool to get stuff that's kind of close to what the human eye can do.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really amazing shooting with it and seeing that really, like you just said, it's capturing really just what you are able to see with your eyes.
Yeah, that's a really fun part about it. And then that's also what's so cool about being like our age and being photographers is we're going to get to kind of grow into some of this technology as it really starts to mature over the next like decade and two decades. It's really going to advance a lot where we get into way more capable sensors. I mean, you know, now if we're just getting to this point where we think like, oh, wow, that's starting to look like what an eye can do. Like imagine 10 years now into the future where we get wide dynamic range photos or, you know, like things that have like just way more capabilities or way more information than the files we get now. We get like 3D maps that are like 360 degree. You know, we're going to be shooting holograms someday.
Yeah, no kidding.
It'll be cool if it happens. I don't know. But it's fun that, working with the Sony stuff and kind of transitioning into something that's a bit more of a modern camera system. For like a long time in the last couple of years, we were shooting with a Nikon D3 system, and which was great. And that was kind of the first time that we were working with full frame cameras. Which was a big upgrade too. I mean, you know, outside of the film work that we did for a long time. Yeah, working with full frame digital was a big upgrade. And then now working with video, which is a silly thing to talk about. It sounds like 2009. But I'm really excited. Yeah, having a DSLR, or now not a DSLR since it's not single lens reflex. These mirrorless ones are interchangeable lens cameras.
Right. I saw that it was written as that in some articles that I read.
Yeah.
And I was like, what?
An interchangeable lens camera. It's kind of strange, but I've liked shooting with it and kind of changing over to that.
Yeah, it's really cool because it's kind of our camera setup before was like you said, it was the D3, the Nikon D3.
Yeah,
but that doesn't do video.
No video.
Those are our full frame camera, and then the camera that we had for video stuff was my Nikon D7000, which is not full frame.
Yeah, the crop sensor. But it was cool though, like working with it and trying
to. It was great. I loved that camera.
We
got a lot of really wonderful video with it.
Yeah.
But it's so cool having a full frame camera that does really nice video, really amazing low light video.
Yeah, it really does a lot. You know, I know that the A7S is like the model that's supposed to be like the hot one for video.
Right, yeah.
I think it has a different kind of sensor in it. It's like a way lower megapixel sensor. And I think it's supposed to be able to capture some kind of higher quality file type. Like I think it's S-Log. That's what I've heard before. It's, you know how we were shooting like the AVCHD or MP4s. I think there's this other one called S-Log. It's sort of like, it's closer to a RAW file, or it's supposed to be closer to like a higher end file that you would get out of a cinema camera sort of thing, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. Is I think a little close to what it is. But yeah, these cameras do like a great job at shooting video. It's been really cool to try and get used to that. And man, like compared to what you could do years ago, it's astounding what you can do. It's awesome. So it's been cool switching over. But see, the thing is like we have an A7R. I think this was modern technology in 2014, if that sounds right. Maybe it was 13. But I think, yeah, it was like 2014 that this one had popped out. And it's a fantastic camera. I really appreciate it. I mean, we were living here at that time. It doesn't seem like it's that far in the past. But there's been a lot of advancement even since then, and especially from Sony as an equipment manufacturer for cameras. And I think you were doing some research about that, and you pulled up some great notes about like the A7R III release that was just announced.
Right.
It's pretty cool. We had like the A9 announced, I think, earlier this year, which is also a really interesting camera option. Like it's the higher, the more fully professional version of a Sony interchangeable lens camera.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's what it's supposed to be. But there's a lot of interesting stuff about the A7R III now that could be pretty cool. I think it's a new battery type.
Did you hear about
that? Yeah. It's like a higher capacity battery system now.
Yeah, which is great news because those batteries suck.
It's really
that's what I don't like about this camera.
Yeah, for as much as screen time as it uses with the fully
active
back screen.
It makes sense that it would use so much battery.
Yeah, and for the types of files that it's writing to a disk, mm-hmm. I mean, if you ask like your laptop to transfer 40 gigabytes, like when we shot one of those weddings and we burned through a battery, it's like, well, we did write 32 gigabytes to a card.
Pretty constantly.
Yeah, pretty constantly. Yeah, we wrote video like constantly. So I guess it must take like some amount of electrons to want to run that, to charge it. So it's amazing that it can do it, but it's really awesome and necessary that the A7R III gets the upgrade of having a more stable battery system. And that's really been one of the downsides of the Sony system for a long time. The other upgrade that they've been talking about was improved autofocus systems. Like it was a faster autofocus. I don't know anything about it though, but I've been upset with the autofocus system so far on the A7R. I think a lot of people have complained about that. It's one of those weird things where I think it has like a gajillion autofocus points, but just they're not like fast. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's like it has them, but they don't like operate.
Yeah, they don't respond the way that they're supposed to all the time.
It doesn't seem like it. I mean, I suppose it was supposed to be kind of a slower autofocusing camera. I don't really know what changes the dynamics of what makes it like faster or slower, but man, yeah, it was definitely behind some of the competition on Canon or on Nikon of like just being in focus.
Yeah.
And maybe that's an issue that we have with our camera. It could very well be more prevalent with, you know, this one. But I noticed like with the A7 II that we had for a while, that seemed to like pull focus a little faster.
Yeah.
It seemed to like work a little bit sharper.
It seemed like the second model, and I bet the A7 R2 is probably similarly a little bit quicker at it.
I know that it was supposed to have a new autofocus system in it. It was like a 500 point autofocus system that was supposed to be just kind of across everything. It was supposed to be a lot better, is I guess what I understand about it. I don't know what it was supposed to be really, but now this one's supposed to be better than that one.
That's what I heard. I heard it was supposed to be pretty comparable to the A9, I think.
That's great. I mean, I hope that it's decent or acceptable. And it's really cool that it's coming out soon. I think we're probably likely to hear announcement of an A7 or, yeah, an A7S III, an A7S III instead of an A7R III. Yeah, I think we're going to see like an upgrade to that one also sometime in this next year. And maybe an A7 III as that goes too, you know, with this upgraded battery system.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, maybe an upgraded sensor or upgraded sensor options or something. But it seems like maybe they're on track to do something like that in the next year. I think they kind of spaced their announcements out a little bit.
Yeah, they're quick with it. Or they have a lot of announcements, it seems like. Or just like through the last few years, it seems like so many things have been updated.
Oh, totally.
A lot of times.
I totally agree.
Like quicker than Canon comes out with things, quicker than Nikon comes out with it. It seems like
it's going pretty fast though. I do remember like 2000, mm-hmm. like 2001, 2003, 2004, and 2005, man, it really exploded during that time. Like the, like it was just boom, 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 a camera like every 6 months or something. It seemed like, you know, to get that many iterations out that mm-hmm. quickly, it was like, 'cause they were just populating the whole market channel for right. the first time with digital cameras. So they just had, they had to make the professional one, the intermediate one, the beginner one, all at the same time for the first right. time. And then again, like a year later. So they, it was just like every couple of weeks, it seemed like there was a new camera system coming out. Yeah. And yeah, like, I mean, if you imagine like how much change there was between 2000 and 2007 or so, that was like, that was a huge growth, you know, in camera stuff during that time. It was crazy how that was. And then now like we're kind of thinking like 2010 to 2017, let's say. Sony's definitely come a long way. I think in 2010, they were working on like the early NEX mirrorless systems, those cropped crop sensor systems. Yeah. And that was kind of the predecessor to the A6000, A6500, you know, whatever they have right now. Mm-hmm. That's out. But yeah, it was interesting how they've kind of progressed so much and then really built out the interchangeable or the mirrorless systems. Because for a long time in the 2000s, they had sort of a mid-range Sony line that was built by Mamiya, I think, or not Mamiya, some other camera mm-hmm. manufacturer, Minolta.
Oh, Minolta. Okay.
Minolta made Sony DSLRs, I think, in the 2000s. The other A series, like the one that we gave our friends, like that was, I think, a camera that was sort of constructed by Minolta as a manufacturer, but it was sold as a Sony system and sold with Sony branded glass. I don't know. Sony was looking for a camera system, but I think that these are now like more in-house Sony systems, and they're much, much better. You know, like that's why like Sony DSLRs was never really something you heard of back about 10 years ago.
Right.
And then now, like the next point that you'd brought up is that Sony is overtaken Nikon as the second company in the US for full frame interchangeable lens camera sales.
Yeah.
Really interesting. I heard another thing. There was a photo, I don't know, some photo convention over in New York. And there was, there's like, you know, two big booths. It was traditionally Canon in a big booth and then Nikon in a big booth. This year, not Nikon, it's Sony in that spot.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah. Sony's taken over in that spot. Sony's announcing the A7R III. I think Nikon had just had an announcement. You know, they're at the place, but they're at a different booth or they're somewhere else or something. And so it's interesting to kind of see that changeover from so many people sort of moving away from Nikon stuff and moving into some of this interesting Sony equipment that's been coming up.
It's really interesting. I mean, we really noticed it, I think, too, just when we were selling off our Nikon stuff
and
getting new Sony stuff. We saw a lot of other people seemed to be doing the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it definitely seemed like that. When I cruised through KEH, it really seems like Sony camera bodies are really hard to be found. They're pretty hard to come by. So there's definitely
Everyone's
a demand
right
for
now.
It. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting to see kind of how that shift is happening or how it's occurring.
It's really interesting. I see a lot of people using the A6000.
Yeah.
Also, or like the not quite professional level ones. I see a lot of people using just Sony cameras.
I think that was one of the highest selling cameras of the year that it was produced.
The A6000.
Yeah, I think that's one of the highest.
Oh, yeah, I'd believe it. That's a really good camera for as cheap as it is.
Yeah.
That's a great camera.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is one of the best cameras that you can get started with, I think. Yeah. And with a lot of the things that it does and for how simply it really gets it done. I've been way impressed.
Yeah, easy to use.
Yeah, I've been working with an A6000 for a few months now just as a production camera for work. And it works great. It's just the base kit. It's really simple. It was way cheaper than like the $1,500 7D Mark II system that we were working with. And that was just body only. This was like, you know, lens and flash, and we were half the price or something. So for a production system like this, yeah, it just fit in just perfectly. It was fine. It was both crop sensor, you know, nothing different about it. So, so yeah, it's been really interesting to kind of see some of the interesting stuff that Sony's doing. But I don't know what I thought was cool about some of the Sony transition stuff. Ooh, our heaters are coming on.
I hear that.
At least they're coming off this time. Yeah. Yeah. It's a fun old house with a boiler in the basement. And then as the heaters come on, it sounds like people are sledgehammering the pipes and the walls. Maybe they'll pop the sound filter or the noise gate that we've got. But yeah, with some of the Sony stuff, it's been cool transitioning and kind of being part of the wave of stuff that we're learning about and being able to kind of dip into some of the low light stuff that we can do, some of the video stuff that we can do.
I've liked it so much.
No, it's been really useful. I've learned a lot just by doing that. And, you know, like before that, we were really invested in film equipment. And that was a really cool workflow. Like for the last couple of years, we've been doing 35 millimeter film processing stuff. Or, you know, we'd have it processed and do digital adjustments to it. And then scan it and show it and stuff. And that's been great. I really dug the style that we got out of that. And I want to dip back into that a little bit with like the N80.
Yeah.
But for like professional, like commercial activity and work and stuff, I think it's great. Like moving into the Sony stuff. And I really want to invest in some glass with you.
Oh man, me too.
Yeah. We got to do more glass.
Yeah. We need a few more lenses.
Thanks a lot for checking out this episode of the Billy Newman Photo Podcast. Hope you guys check out some stuff on BillyNewmanPhoto.com. A few new things up there, some stuff on the homepage, some good links to other outbound sources, some links to books, some links to some podcasts, links to some blog posts. All pretty cool. But yeah, check it out at BillyNewmanPhoto.com. Thanks a lot for listening to this episode of the podcast. Talk to you next time.